Hello, beautiful listeners. Welcome on back to the X-Wing segment of the Wide World of Wargaming. As always, I am your host, Vincent Borgato. Joining me, my two esteemed colleagues. First, Mr. Jeff Wilder.
If this is a consular ship, where is the ambassador?
And Mr. Drew Bishop.
Hello there.
And we are going to be covering Nova a little bit late. As many of you understood, we did have a small internal crisis last week. So we will be a little bit behind, but we hope to be just as informative and entertaining as always. Whether that's a 4 on your scale or an 11, let's go ahead and dive right in. We are going to start looking at the first day of the 2019 Nova Open. And I think the highlight of this day, the highlight of Heat 1 was probably Duncan Howard coming out as the number one overall, surprising exactly nobody, I think, right?
Well, he was running First Order, right? And I think that was what surprised people, because he was like, I'm going to do it with every faction. And not that, you know, I would say he wasn't going to do it with every faction, but if you were going to have anyone do it with every faction, it would have been Duncan Howard.
And then he double surprised people by running First Order and not having Kylo in the list.
Right. Yeah.
And then he triple surprised people when he lost to a Tigressor.
Thank you for burying the lead on that one, Drew. But let's just talk real quick about what he brought, and let's also talk about his MOV being bonkers. He brought Blackout with Fanatical, Quick Draw with Crackshot, Special Forces Gunner, FCS, and Afterburners, which is kind of that's the Quick Draw build if you want to put everything on Quick Draw, right?
Pattern analyzer.
The Clint Eastwood Quick Draw.
Sure. Also, there are some people who prefer a shield upgrade in Fanatical instead of Afterburners and Crackshot. But if you're playing on a budget, aka you have to fit, you know, Lieutenant Tavson and a TIE silencer, there you go. Speaking of which, Tavson with Biohex and Jamming Beam. Why do people keep? I mean, yes, it's 0 points, but isn't it just card clutter?
It is.
I don't understand.
I mean, there's an element. I would imagine there's an element of, man, I would really hate to run into one of those 1 in 200 cases where I wish I had a jamming beam and I don't. I should have carried a jamming beam. But I also think that there's a small element of people think it's amusing. It's card clutter.
It's free. Why not?
Situations I see that thing being useful. Number one is if you're going after a hawk, a moldy crow, and the other is if you're going after Whisper, right? Am I missing anything else?
Even Whisper, I'd rather do damage. I'd rather do damage.
Sure. I just think if you're going after a Whisper that's got a stealth device, 2 evades and a focus, I mean, you're not going to do damage.
You think you're going to hit it with a jamming beam? Because if you hit it with a jamming beam, you would have done damage. That's the problem with the jamming beam.
That's fair. Right. I guess the idea is that you would hope they roll poorly and make them burn the tokens anyway. So no matter what they lose, you know? That'd be the only thing I can think out of it.
Getting a lot of AVP vibes out of this, right? Whoever wins, we lose, right? Like,
yeah. just with Whisper being on the board, somebody already lost. But I'm not doing that again. Jeff already got mad at me for it. Jeff, you had an interesting observation about day one compared to day two. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about that?
Yeah, so these were very deep cuts for the crowd that made it to. It was two 1-day heats. Each day cut to 32. And even though what do we got? We got in heat one, we got 88. In heat two, we got 95 people. Heat one had a significantly fewer number of people into the deep cut. How do you want to count 8 or you want to count 16, or because it's significant either way?
The number I remember from pre-show is that we counted to 16 and it was only 5 people.
5 people from day one. So that's significant. That's like, you know, it could just be a random outlier, but it's certainly interesting. It's like the day two people produced what people capable of running deeper in the cut, I guess.
The other interesting thing is there were no faction repeats out of those five guys.
Oh, that is.
Yeah, that was the most interesting thing that I was looking at. Was like, whoa, they're all different.
And we do want to give a shout out real quick to my favorite list from this event, Preston Bitzer doing the Jake Mooney special of Fat Han and Proton Rocket Jake coming in, making overall eighth into the cut.
Yeah, I saw him play that list. He played it well in the game that I saw.
How viable do you guys think two ship rebels is? Like, really?
You gotta know what you're doing.
You're rolling uphill with two ships. You're really rolling uphill with two ships. It's just, I mean, if you're gonna do it, Fat Han is one of the ways to do it. But even so, man, it's just, you know, you don't have the inertial dampener shenanigans any longer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, he's spending 26 points on Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, it's a lot for Luke Gunner.
Yeah, it's tough. It's two ships is tough.
And remember, folks, this is extended, meaning that's 26 points of literally anything else he could have taken in Rebels.
Mm-hmm.
Really, if you think about it, he left an Aaron Kraken on the side of the board by taking Luke Gunner and Proton Rockets on Jake.
Yeah, that's sort of a side effect of the fact that games just aren't going to time any or aren't going to completion any longer.
Mm-hmm.
So really, he left Aaron Kraken's points on board the Falcon, where they couldn't be collected by his opponent.
That's fair, especially with an engine upgrade Han. I mean, who doesn't need actions to have dice mods? Which is, I mean, that's Han. That's why you take him.
Yeah, but that also tells you like how the games were played, at least with the two ship build, right? You have to play KG like the entire tournament, every round. You're boosting with Han to try to get out of the arc, and like you may not get a whole lot of shots right now. If you do get that alpha strike with Han or Jake, you know, and you swing the game your way, like then you become aggressive, right? But I don't know, watching two ship builds in 2.0, it's a slow, real slow crawl, and is it fun? Maybe not.
I wonder if two ship builds are maybe as taxing on a player as a swarm.
No, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think that's the big draw. The big draw is you've got two dials to plan. It isn't as taxing on the player. It's just if you make that, we talked about this with Jake Mooney's list and the inertial dampeners. If you're not right on top of the game, if you make one mistake, Han Solo just takes 9 damage, and you're like, what happened?
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
There is one other list out of this that I like. James Weber, 30th overall on day one, with using some upgrades that you don't really – well, one in particular that I love on U-Wings, Jyn Erso.
Mm-hmm.
Blue Squadron Scout with Jyn, Attack Scrambler, Heftober with Intimidation, maybe some of the best 48 points you can put in a Rebel list. Another Blue Squad Scout with Leia, and Benthic Perceptive Chopper, which is, I am going to get 2 focus tokens and give them to someone, and one of them is probably going to turn into an evade. There is nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
Good luck chewing through this much hull with that many free evades.
Yeah. And it's not like they're too agility. Unless they're turning around, they're 2 agility. So
yeah,
it's 32 hit points behind 2 agility. So that's the equivalent of about 45 hit points of Y-Wings, for instance.
Right. Or better X-Wings.
Or better X-Wings.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Is there any, do you guys spot anything you really liked?
I mean, there are a lot. All of these lists are good as I'm looking through. Like, there's nothing, you know. Second after Swiss is Sigh and Whisper and Soon Tear Fell. How are you gonna? You can't really criticize that in terms of being good.
Double
Fire Spray list, third after Swiss. But again, you know, we're looking at these, and second after Swiss he did great in Swiss, and then he hit the round of 64 and ran into somebody who took care of him.
Yeah.
Same with Boba and Koshka Frost. Did great in Swiss, and then hit the round of 64, and it's gone.
Same with two of the premier swarms, Bob Steen Jensen with the Energy Shell TA-175 swarm, mm-hmm. and Jeff Brown with the Sinker swarm.
Yeah,
Nathan May with the TA-175 swarm didn't get out of the 64. The only one that I see out of day two is Miguel Justiano. I'm going to try this, Justiano, with a TA-175 swarm without Energy Shell charges, but he ran two Bulbasaur, so. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's weird about the trade-off with TV, right? Like, you know, do you run the energy cells? Do you not? And I think, does the data we have kind of show that TV without the energy shells is more viable than with the energy shells and say, Kraken?
I don't think we have anything that that detailed, unfortunately.
Nothing definitive. TA-175 is the one that one that scatters coins when you die, right?
Yeah, he's the Fiesta for those for the Gold Squadron podcast members out there.
I really like that one a lot. It's fascinating to me that he gets more from six drones than he does from five drones with energy shells, or four with energy shells, I guess, and then the naked one. That's interesting to me.
It's also interesting that it doesn't look like swarms really did that well at this event.
Nope.
Like, at all.
Oh, by the way, there's an interesting little anomaly at number 17 overall, Adam Ferrate. He's got the double infiltrator list, Maul and Dooku, which we thought was long dead. He did pretty well with that, but he didn't. It looks like he dropped before the cut.
That's what I would assume. Another one that I saw people playing with that I have yet to see any real success with is double Delta Squad defenders and then like I scrub third. I mean, I don't remember exactly what the third piece normal is, but
you can do a good Merrick with it. Actually have that in my casual play night box is double Delta Merrick. I haven't played it yet, so I can't tell you much about it. But the Merrick in it is pretty good. It's just, you know, he's a nit five, and that's your ace. So,
right. You could also do the what's it called? The Reaper with say Death Troopers to like stop your opponent from K turning to like try to catch the deltas. But it's harder to do that because you don't have an ace.
The thing about that with the deltas is the Reaper is like the target, and a Reaper has 8 hit points and 1 agility. Your opponent doesn't care if he K turns because you're going to be dead after the first round.
Isn't it interesting that the Reaper is basically the same price as or the same toughness as a Y-Wing, and yet all of them probably cost like 8 to 10 points more?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've got really good pilot abilities.
Well, and the dial is so much better.
Yeah. They just need – it's a really good ship. It's just they need somebody to take the heat off of them, which the Deltas do not do.
No. Especially if it's the only – I mean, with it being the only support ship, normally whatever's on it is fairly important and fairly pricey, and that means that it's going to get sniped.
Yeah.
Right.
Because defenders stock do not do enough damage to really protect it. I don't think like 3 dice is good. I don't want to, you know, 3 dice is strong, but it's 3 dice with a focus. Most ships can take 1 or 2 hits if they know they're going to dive onto the Reaper.
Right. And keep in mind the Deltas are firing dead last. You know, it's not like.
So they may not even have that focus by then.
Or they probably will, because are you going to shoot at a Delta with evade and focus when you could shoot at a Reaper with maybe 1 green token?
Depends how many ships I have.
Yeah.
But I get your point. I definitely get your point. Wasn't one of the, I don't want to say, I mean, Cinderella was kind of Evan Springer. I think we I think this got across, got some discussion outside of the event. Tarani Kolda with clusters, R5TK munitions, Old Tarok with Fearless, Torkoal with the Crow, and Seavor with Crackshot.
Yeah. Yeah, that we, that Tarani Kolda build is nasty. It is quite intricate. And the one game I saw him play, he didn't actually get it off, but it's brilliant build. If people want to try to put that together and see how it works, it is a brilliant build.
I actually just realized that I did exactly what I didn't want to do and jumped ahead to day two, but let's just continue on that note. So we'll tap out on heat one and then use Evan as our lead in. Out of day two, your number one overall was Mr. Glenn Dean running the now infamous Quad T70. Three Red Squadron experts with Heroic and Jessica Pava with a BB and Black One. Okay.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, she's usually the one they go for first, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, she's got the rerolls, right? She's tough to take down. If you can catch her, that's real good. But with Black One, turns out it's really hard to catch her.
You could end up staring down three red squads with focus tokens and going, "Hi, buddy, you missed."
Yep, exactly.
I mean,
Jeff, go ahead.
I think you could do with her, right, is you could go with BB-8 instead.
That's a waste of BB-8.
I mean, it kind of is, especially thematically. But you know what, Jess, in the comic book, her deal is that she kept getting Astromechs killed until they refused to fly with her.
Wait, the droids were self-aware enough to know that one pilot was getting them all killed?
Yes. So, yeah. So they organized
their That's incredible.
Pilot. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
is that why she's called the Destroyer?
The droids
named her the Destroyer. Oh, God.
The droid that's... name. Yep. Oh. It's pretty awesome.
No, that's awful. Oh, that makes her such a dark character. Like,
no, it wasn't. She wasn't doing it at all on purpose. It's just that she flew with droids and she came back and the droids didn't.
Oh,
you know, I gotta tell you.
Oh my God.
Okay. I gotta tell you guys though, I'm sorry to like completely derail us, but the one thing that like literally keeps me up at night is the story of how AI came to be in the Star Wars universe. Because you think about it, right? Like C-3PO takes so much shit from everybody, but yet everyone tells him to do something and he still does it, even if he doesn't want to do it. So like where is the line drawn, right? Like, you know, do they have artificial intelligence or do they not? Because clearly, right, like a droid has to, you know, go with her, but then, you know, she comes back and the droid doesn't. And then it's like,
and the other ones notice, and
the other ones notice, and they don't want to.
Yeah, like that's not only does that require self, like a certain amount of what self awareness,
sure,
that would almost make them sentient.
I don't think there's any question, but that droids are sentient in the Star Wars universe.
Oh no, but like I want to see when it first, right? Like who was the first? Like AI droid, almost a very a la, what is it, Animatrix, right? Like going back to what happened.
Oh, God, I hated that movie.
Yeah, it was not the best, but I thought that it was at least interesting where they tried to touch down upon, you know, artificial intelligence and how it kind of evolved over time.
Yeah.
But either way, it makes me think of IG and the Star Wars universe and like how that came to be.
Yeah.
I kind of think, I actually like how iRobot did it a little better. But nobody likes that movie except me. Let's talk about the fact that Jesse Van Wyck and Jill McGlinchey coming in second and third on day two have, I don't want to say identical list, but I mean, one of them brought Vader with proton rockets. And if there's ever a more offensive build in this game, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, he was looking to kill something with that.
That's a one tap build. Because if you think about it, you're guaranteeing, well, I don't want to say guarantee, yeah, you're guaranteeing a crit, right, through ATC, or is that primary only?
Pretty sure it's primary only.
Okay.
That's almost a redundant. Proton rockets are just a one die away from being redundant on Vader, really.
Yeah.
Range 2, awesome. So.
Yeah.
Proton turns one into a crit, right?
No, only the torpedoes and the advanced, not the rockets. That's right. The rockets trade that for a die. Clearly it works to a degree. That's probably, you know what? That kind of feels like a way to just insta-tap something. Like, you run into a 5 or 6 build list, you've got, you know, Vader and Dutch, or Suntir and Duchess can delete one thing pretty reliably, and then Vader just proton rockets somebody off the face of the earth.
Well, that's the other thing about this list, too. Suntir and Duchess are very, like, dodgy, right? So if your opponent chooses to go for either one of them, Vader can just come in and be like, I'm just gonna, you know, beat you over the head with my rocket.
That is the beautiful thing about Vader, is if you don't get a block on him, he's gonna roll 5 hits 80% of the time, and four or more hits 95% of the time.
Yeah.
He's going to have the target lock in focus. I just think that
95% of the time, 100% of the time.
Yeah.
I if it was Vader, I would always assume 5 hits coming in.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Yep.
Another singer score.
69 points, by the way.
I'm sorry?
Suntir Fel is a magical 69 points.
The perfect blend
of odd point total. How did that make you feel, Jeff?
No, I'm just pointing out that he's 69 points and the MOV is 1669, and that's magical.
Oh, I mean, at least one time Suntir survived on full health, and that was the difference. Here's one that I think this is the list that ended up getting Duncan. Is it? Mike, is it Mike Gemmy? Yeah. Is that how you say his name? Or is it Mike Gem?
I think
Suntir with Predator, Pure Sabacc with a shield, Lieutenant Sai with the Emperor, and the TIE Aggressor with Barrage Rockets.
I love that list, man. I love that list.
I don't want to. I have no business saying anything to Duncan Howard. My only question is how.
It's just a good list. I mean, it's barrage rockets on something on a platform as cheap as the aggressor is strong. And what are you going to do? I mean, you've obviously the aggressor is an easy target, right? Compared to the other ones. But if you concentrate on the aggressor, you've got Shy with Palpatine, you've got Pure Sabacc hitting you with 4 dice and he's got 5 hull. You've got Suntir Fel doing Suntir Fel things with Predator. There's just no weakness in this list. Even if you think of the aggressor with barrage rockets as a weakness, that is a good weakness to have, man.
Right, you get the best of both worlds.
Next one that I want to draw attention to, I just had it. I think we kind of have to. The Wookiee gunship makes its we cannot guarantee that this is its debut appearance in an extended cut, but we are almost certain. Wolf Waro, Chewbacca crew, and a whole upgrade. Garvin Drace, Green Squadron with Crackshot, and Benthic with Perceptive. Speaking of which, does it feel like Benthic is starting to show up in a lot more lists?
I mean, the double focus is.
But wasn't it kind of agreed upon for a while that he was too expensive with Perceptive? I mean, that's a 55-point ship.
I mean, but you're passing focus tokens, though, right? Like, that's...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I come from the days of Manaru, the terrors of Manaru. RIP, but...
There's also just the fact that with Rebels being hit so hard, people are just trying to find replacement stuff. And U-Wing is not a bad place to look. So.
Yeah. I wanted
Garvin Drace in, I believe that's Garvin Drace in the ARC, not in the X-Wing. Although now.
I would have to look at what Wolf Waro costs. But it is possible. Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't have that information, oddly. That's weird,
that is weird
that it wouldn't list that. And then of course you have the people who were living in the past, Wedge, Dutch, 10, Braylon, Craig Ferguson, my man, just give it up, dog.
Go back to comedy, Craig Ferguson.
just it ain't gonna fly anymore, man. It's not gonna work. Anybody else coming out of day two? We should mention Marcel running Luke Wedge with Torps and regen, Luke with Torps, Sense Torps and regen, and AP5 with Leia.
Turns out Aces with Coordinator still good.
And Leia. And
Proton.
And Leia, yeah.
Hey, have we seen Ved Foslo in a list yet? Because 7th overall on day two is Ved Foslo, which I don't remember seeing him before.
Yeah, there have been a couple hyperspace trials, I think, where Ved Foslo has come out. I definitely remember him being mentioned before.
So this is, I mean, that list, number 7 overall, that list is a list of, like, also-rans.
Yeah.
The junior varsity comes out to play.
The junior varsity. These are all the guys who weren't good enough to fly TIE defenders, I think, is kind of what's going on here. Merrick with marksmanship, FCS, and the return Proton Rockets 2, the revenge. Ved Foslo with crackshot and FCS. Zertik Strom, a name we don't say very often, with FCS. And then the breakout star, I think, of the last couple months, which is Colonel Jenden.
Yeah,
I think of, you know, of any ship, I think that's probably the I would say that's the breakout ship of the last couple months.
I mean, he's the super E-wing, right? The faction with the better
ships. Yeah, for his whole squad. Yeah, it's that double mods, man. Even if it's just on one engagement. Double mods turns out is strong.
And it's a lot of critical hits. And when you start, like, if you roll decent with those and you're getting 3 hits a turn, it's not going to stop. And eventually you're going to land those direct hits.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, our friend there did not go very deep into day two. Noah Routhier going out in the second round of 32. There was one more I wanted to mention that was around here.
I like number 16, Joel Springle's list.
4 cartels and a black sun? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this podcast is a fan of the Kirage, and I'm not really a fan of the black sun because I think Gurry is just so much better.
Well, if you can fit Gurry in a list with 4 cartel marauders, you let me know because I will fly the crap out of that.
Yeah, I'm
just going to say it. I think he might have done better dropping a cartel and the Black Sun and taking Gurry.
I mean, it depends on what his style is, right? I mean, Gurry does require Gurry requires this, like, this ability to walk the edge and be super, super careful until you know you're darting in for a range one. You have to know you're getting in for a range one. And if you do not, without getting shot by 3 people, and if you don't know that, you just can't do that. Like, I have trouble with Gurry sometimes because either I fail at protecting Gurry early, or I make the decision too late to dive into range one, right? And if you make the decision too late, Gurry can't do enough work to justify your points. So.
Yep. Yep.
I just think that 3 cartel marauders is enough to body block for her, and enough dice that, you know, if you're going to try to counter predict Gurry, then he can counter predict you with the cartels, and just go ahead and sit there waiting for her. Unfortunately, you're going to take 9 to 12 dice with focus tokens.
Well, you brought us into this with Evan Springer's list. Let's talk about that beautiful Tarani call to build.
You're the mastermind. You're the one who figured out how it works. Tell the people.
I was going to say, please go over
full
for me
disclosure,
too.
I didn't figure this out. I saw it played on stream, and it was explained to me because I would never come up with it in a million years. So it's Tarani Kalda with Tarani Kalda is the Kimahilo with the ability to, if they don't have a green token, when you attack and they're in your bullseye, and it can be more than one ship, if they don't have a green token, they take a damage. So then it's cluster missiles, R5TK, which allows you to attack a friendly ship, munitions failsafe. So the dream here is to target lock a friendly ship, put that friendly ship somewhere, where you can attack it with one or more enemy ships in your bullseye. Declare the attack on the friendly ship. Declare munitions failsafe, and the two ships or the ships in your bullseye take damage. And then because it's cluster missiles, do it again.
Wait. I'm sorry. Because you canceled the original attack, you're allowed to make a second cluster missile attack? Do I have
cluster
that right?
Cluster missiles is two attacks.
Yep. Right. But what I'm asking is you are limited to one bonus attack. So is the are what you're saying is that when you use munitions on the attack at Old Tarok and you cancel it, you're now allowed to make a second cluster missile attack, just for the listeners, correct?
You're still limited to one bonus attack, so you're still only making two attacks. The idea is that you attack a ship, right? You do the one damage, that probably an enemy ship. You do the one damage, whatever. Then you shift your focus to another ship, where there are ships still between you and that ship in your bullseye arc, and you do another attack, and that other ship can be friendly, and you can just cancel all the damage, and it doesn't cancel Tarani Kulda's ability. So you're doing two attacks with your cluster missiles or whatever, you're not using all the charges from your cluster missiles, and you're still doing Tarani Kulda's ability.
Got it.
And it's pretty genius. And of course, the other three ships in the list are strong. All of them are strong on their own. Old Tarok with Fearless, Torkoal Mux with Moldy Crow, and Captain Fever with Crackshot.
You know, I think that there is one of the benefits to having this split up into 2 days and having close to 200 players is that we did see a lot of different, you know, kind of weird lists make it into a cut of 64. And that is always the bonus of having a large cut. But let's go ahead and move on to the day that really matters, Championship Day 2. And first, we have to congratulate our overall champion, Mr. David Kelly, running Lieutenant Psy with ST321, Vader with Hate, Passive Sensors, and Afterburners, and Echo, Juke, Passive Sensors, and Fifth Brother. So well done to you, sir. Congratulations on abusing the most undercosted ace in the game and the Empire's complete overabundance of Force users and I-6s. Sorry, was that salty? I didn't mean for that to come across that way. Second place going to the Carson Ray Special, Anakin with R2-7B, Sense R2-A6, Calibrated Kenobi, and Predator R2 Rick Ollier. I mean, C above. Like, I don't know what else to say. Force users, I-6, aces and I-6s, force users, you know what I mean?
Right. With heal. With heal.
With regen. The one thing the Empire doesn't have, regen.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely a final that validates everything we've been saying for a while now, for sure.
I think everyone's kind of caught on to it. For better or for worse. Mostly for worse.
We should also, though, give some applause to Michelle Nguyen Kwok running Sinker, Wolf, Rick, and Double Gold Squadron, which if you had to pick a list that doesn't belong there, it's either him or Mike Jem.
I mean, it's the, you know, maybe this swarm player kicked out the other swarms, right? Like, it's the higher initiative swarm.
Is that a swarm?
Five ships? I think the wolf are pretty nasty to take down.
Yeah, but a swarm. I don't know about
asking if it's a swarm. And generally, I'm not saying it isn't either. I'm truly asking. Five ships seems to me like it's what we used to call a mini swarm.
Right. No, and maybe that's what I should call it. But definitely a mini swarm.
And it is only one ship above the new meta average.
The thing about the mini swarm is usually that was built around a battleship, right? A good shuttle or decimator or whatever. This doesn't really have something that it's built around unless it's a binary star system between Sinker and Wolf.
I was gonna say it's built around a ship.
Have either of you guys played Sinker Swarm yet?
I've flown Sinker in a handful, not a swarm. I found it really difficult to not point, always have him pointed at something, because I don't want to waste, you know, the majority of his point cost, which is a three die gun. But the way I've seen people be most successful with Sinker is having him kind of just orbit, making sure that the majority of the shooters are always in his side arc.
Your opponent, I did it for the first time this past Sunday, I guess it was Saturday actually. I played Sinker for the first time with two other arcs and Rick. And my opponent was very good about forcing me to make really interesting moves in order to, one, get Sinker a shot, and two, get ships rerolls in my side arcs. And I found it pretty rewarding. It was this weird puzzle. Like, at one point, my ships were facing in one direction, and in order for me to get a shot with Sinker and have them in arcs, Sinker had to be next to them facing the other direction. So I had to figure out how to make that happen. I have a lot more respect now for Sinker Swarm players, because I found it interesting and difficult.
I mean, after this, you know, and it should be said that right after him is the only Swarm to make the top 16. Which, as we said, is Miguel running, six drones and two Belbalobs. Everybody else didn't get out of the 30, you know, didn't get out of two rounds earlier. And really, there was only two other swarms. One was the Sinker Swarm who lost in the 64, Jesse Bosch. And I guess you could say Matthew Pettit with the Torkoal Mini Swarm.
Yeah.
I'm surprised the Torkoal Mini Swarm didn't do better. Everyone was, you know, talking about it as like, I mean, maybe it was just my fear about like the whole like new boogeyman sort of thing, but it like was on the map and then it kind of just whoosh, right? Came and went.
You know, it's my problem with that. And I love that list. Let's be perfectly clear. I adore this list. It's very, very good, and it shredded one of my favorites out of the last of the event where it made itself known. The problem with it is that if you don't play it correctly against aces, like if Torkoal gets sniped out right away, you just lose. Yeah.
It's fairly easy to kill Torkoal. I mean, even from range 3, it's 6 hit points behind 2 agility. It's fairly easy to take care of.
Five hit points.
It. Also, there's a factor. The surprise is no longer there, right? And that's a real thing. The surprise, it's a real thing. Yeah. So, I am more surprised about looking the lack at of this. Oh. I am just.
Oh, that. Yep. Sorry.
I think there's enough things in here that probably give a tie swarm problems. Like really serious ones. Not to mention, like you guys said, probably everyone on this list has several dozen games against a Tie Swarm.
But I mean, really strong players on this list will also tell you a Tie Swarm is one of the most powerful lists in the game. So there's some disconnect. Right.
Yeah,
you know, right. Like one of these things is sketchy.
Yeah, I can tell you what it is. The Tie Swarm is really good if you've never seen it before. As soon as you've played it a couple times, it almost doesn't matter what list you bring, you're going to beat it.
I don't know about that. But it comes down to engagement, right? But a lot of these lists, like especially the Proton Rocket Vader, right? I mean, technically you can alpha one off, albeit, you know, the Iden, obviously. But, you know, forcing that Iden, right? If you come in trying to hunt down Duchess or Soontir or Anakin or Obi and Rick gets into your side, right? Like, it's not, the game isn't over, but to me it feels like it almost is, right? As soon as you lose one TIE fighter, it feels like it's an uphill battle if you didn't have like an equivalent exchange, right? If you didn't take all the shields off of Obi-Wan, you didn't take all the shields off of Vader, you didn't take the single shield and a damage on Soontir, right?
Yeah. Games against the Tie Swarm, in my experience, tend to go really bad really early or really well really early. But I'll just give you guys a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Like, let's go back to let's look at number 32, James Weber. If you're running that list, so two blue squads, Benthic and Hef, you're throwing only two fewer die than your opponent, and you can go into that with as many tokens, and one of the guys that's up front is just going to get bashed in the face because he's getting Heftober with Intimidate.
If you can block like that.
Well, they're quad U-wings. I mean, it's not going to be hard to block a swarm.
Well, the thing about it is a swarm, the more common swarms are is going to counter-block you. So, because you've got two init ones in the most common TIE swarm right now. So, Tober going into a block, he's going to get counter-blocked. Now, that still gives him his intimidation and everything against the ship that has him blocked. But that could be a big problem for quad use if they stack up like containers on a cargo ship, you know, because somebody blocked them.
I mean, but even then you're talking about at that point, it kind of turns into a variance game. Cause if the U-wings start rolling hot on evades, you can dump four TIE fighters into a U-wing and bounce off.
That's true.
I mean, that point, and the odds are four dice into a TIE fighter of bouncing, even without mods, are not great, especially if you burned your focuses on offense.
Right. The game comes down to variance. If you can get all four U-wings on the TIEs, you should be good. But if you're only getting three U-wings on the TIEs and all six TIEs have a shot, I'd swing that towards the towards the TIEs, but yeah.
I mean, I just think that list is a perfect example of if he knows what he's doing against a TIE swarm, that's going to be that can go really badly for that guy fast. One would be a sinker swarm. I mean, just stacking the evades up right in front of a swarm and going, I have five health and a guaranteed evade. Good luck, dog.
Maybe the reason for the lack of swarms, not just the TIE swarm, but really any swarm, is that there are a lot of lists in here that really prey on them well. Like Zach Cady's list, number 64, that double fire spray list, a swarm basically just has no chance against that list.
And that's without proton bombs or seismics. It's just prox mines.
Prox mines, yeah. And Marauder and Skilled Bombardier. Yeah.
The prox mines are crazy.
Oh, because they just delete one. They just remove one.
Yep.
Hit and you're gone.
And fire sprays don't like anything better than to be chased.
Yep.
Well, that actually makes a really nasty choice for Iden, right? Because the prox mine does one damage plus whatever you roll, so right. You have two instances to Iden, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so like you take the one. Do you want to Iden? And then it's like, oh look, I rolled two, right? Like.
Yeah.
Oof.
And then of course your actual fire is coming in.
Yep. After the die rolls.
There is one list all the way down in the 64s that I do want to mention. A Juke Sigma Echo with Juke and Stealth, Whisper Juke, Fifth Brother and Stealth.
Yep.
It won't die, folks. It will not. Somebody somewhere will still take multiple TIE Phantoms just to be that guy.
But let's rejoice that it's
in the 64s.
So
I mean, except for it's also on the winning list.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, Drew knows I'm never going to talk bad about Echo. So,
I mean, and you know, I haven't played with Echo since 2.0, but I'll be honest with you, man, like being able to fit Echo, like the winning list, right? Like I would take this winning list, you know, Psy, Vader, Echo over, you know, what is the list I was running? Soon Tier, Vader, Whisper, right? Like you got to have the two aces and the support piece, and the support piece has to help whatever your aces do. And, you know, Psy with the double actions and Echo with the, I mean, you can barrel roll before you decloak, right? Like that's super strong, especially with the passive sensors. Like Echo is good. I mean, I don't know if she's better than Whisper, but because she's cheaper, you can fit better aces in with her and better support pieces, so maybe she is.
Yeah.
If they were the same init, then...
Don't even joke about an i5 Echo. Well, oh, no.
Or an i4 Whisper. You could go either way.
Okay, that's better. That's better.
If they were the same init, I don't think there'd be any question, but Echo is the higher skill ceiling ship. Somebody who really knows how to fly Echo is just going to rip you apart.
Uh-huh. Guri 2.0.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Anything else out of Nova that you guys really liked? I love the fact that a double arc at Rick two Gold Squad made top four. I think that's probably the biggest shock of the event for me. Even above Mike Gem.
I think that the Republic has, for such a young faction, Republic has really good pieces that fit together in a number of ways very well. You have these 40 to 50 to 60 point chunks of Republic that are good, and you just put them together in almost any way, and it's no matter what, it may not be a world beater, but it's not going to suck, which means that if you fly it well and you get some luck, then you can do well in a big tournament. So
Wolf is one of the ones that I think is kind of getting left behind because of how good Rick is. Because they're both the dedicated damage dealer kind of in your list, unless you're flying Anakin, but even then Anakin is Mr. I do everything, you lose. But Wolf, because he procs his own mods with the essentially, you know, free Predator. I almost wonder if he might evolve into a crew carrier when Republic starts getting a few more of those, and he'll be able to occupy multiple slots in a list.
I think his cost is preventing him from seeing more play.
He's can't make him any cheaper.
Slow. Oh, I know. No. I'm well aware of that. With the triple aces or the double ace and the support, Wolf is a pretty expensive support for what he does. And even then, he kind of only
is he.
You know, he's not quite support, right?
He's 56, I think, as opposed to
no, he's 50. I'm almost positive Wolf he's 50 or 51.
You are correct. Wolf came down from 51, I think, to 50.
Yeah, I ranted about it, saying that they dropped the price of the best. Of all of the of the Republic arcs, I said it was a bad idea, and it just turned into. But you know, luckily the Sinker Swarm came along, and
well, Sinker also
Obi was the
so
yeah. But I mean, Sinker at 53 is probably closer to 54. Where he is than where he should be. 54, my bad. Let's go ahead and wrap up Nova, and we're going to move into a group of stats that was posted in the Carolina Crates Fantasy Flight thread. Shout out to those guys and to the founder, a guy named Spellock. It's a great name. Just kind of giving an overall faction breakdown of the major extended events this year. So that's the German Grand Champs, the Canadian Grand Champs, the European Grand Champs, because Germany didn't want to include everyone, and the Nova Open.
Yeah, so basically what Spellock did here is he took he examined all the factions and looked at to the extent that the data is entered, of course. Nothing you can do with data is it's not entered, but looked at the percentage of the total that were rebels, Empire, etc. Looked at the percentage of rebels that made cut. And then did a conversion rate, which is just basically a way of comparing the ships that made cut with each other in a better statistical way, even though there are different numbers. And there are some clear winners and losers.
That's a mild way of putting it.
To put it lightly.
So let's just start on Nova, and then we'll move down to all extended. The percentage of the field at Nova... and I'll just go in order. Rebels were approximately 17%. Empire was approximately 18.5%. Scum was approximately 16.5%. Resistance, 12%. First Order, approximately 13.5. Republic, approximately 15. So this is fairly even. I mean, you're talking about the lowest of those was Resistance at 23. The highest was Empire at 34. So that's a fairly even spread. And then you've got poor Separatists down at 13, which I think is probably more just about the fact that, you know, it's expensive to buy that many droids, right, would be my reason for why they're that far down.
I would agree with that. It's actually one of the reasons why I don't have Separatists right now, is because it's just so expensive to, like, get enough ships to actually, you know, build the list and play it.
And then you've got other expenses coming up.
It is a little surprising they didn't put together, like, a two-pack of Vultures for $30, isn't it? That's a little surprising.
No, not surprising.
I mean, you know, they've got the... They have the core set. The core set's a good value. Three ships for whatever it is, $45 or whatever. I'm a little bit surprised. I think you guys are right. I hadn't actually thought of that before. I think you're right that it's very expensive to buy in with six drones and a couple Bellby Labs and an infiltrator, and you're right.
You have to, and not to mention this, you probably want to buy a Strife pack, the Servants of Strife.
Yeah. I mean, when you compare that with the two arcs or the two Guardians of the Republic packs you need, along with maybe an arc or two, there's a significant difference between Republic and Separatists in terms of barrier to entry.
Yeah.
Right. And it may also, I mean, you look at all these top tier Republic lists too. They're like three ships, yeah, right?
Naboo,
like,
Jedi.
Yep, exactly. You buy the one $20 Delta, and then Rick, and like you almost have a list right there, right? Like,
yeah.
And then, you know, like there's not really a point talking about how much the other ones cost. There's enough eBay for Empire, Rebel, Scum, Resistance, that it's not really a big deal.
Exactly.
But let's talk about what... So we should say the two largest included factions were Rebels and Empire. And there's a reason why I'm saying that, because here's the part. That's the shot. Here's the chaser. Rebels were two lists out of the top 32. Empire was 10 of the top 32. So literally a 500%.
Yeah.
Comparison.
To compare that another way, Rebels were brought 17% of the time to tournaments, right?
Yep.
They made cut to top 16 specifically. They made cut 6% of the time. Whereas Empire was brought 19% of the time and made cut 31%.
Wow. The other statistical outliers, I would say, are First Order and Scum, both really underachieving, below what? I mean, below half of their appearance rates. And then Republic overachieving by what? 60%?
Yeah.
And then you've got Separatists who are close enough to be neutral. I would say the statistical noise. Like, literally one player difference. I mean, it is kind of what everyone's known and acknowledged for a while since this meta shook out. Force users and aces tend to be really freaking good. And when you've got those in packages, you're going to do pretty good. And then Resistance is in this weird spot because I think they have the most self-contained action efficiency of the other factions. Would that be fair to say?
In versatility.
Yeah.
Yeah. And right, they do. They just have really strong single pieces. Poe, no matter how you build out Poe, is a good single piece. Heroic Finn is the best 30 points in the game. And so.
Yeah. And that's if you don't put Perceptive Copilot on him.
Right. So yeah, it isn't a surprise, although I am surprised by the extent of the Delta. It's pretty major.
I'm going to illustrate this for the audience one other way. First Order, Resistance, Scum, and Rebels combined for, I mean, what, about 32.5%, I think. No, I'm sorry, 34.5%. Just rounding it off as much as possible. Empire alone was only 2% lower.
Yeah.
Let's you can't really illustrate the problem any clearer than that.
And it doesn't change if we move on to all extended or even all hyperspace.
No, in fact, in two cases, I think it probably got worse.
Actually, Rebels changes a little bit in hyperspace, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, if we look at all of Season 2 Extended, which is, again, the same events we listed, German, Canadian, European, and Nova, Rebels are being played about 15% of the time. They're making cuts less than half of that. Empire is being played close to 22%. They are making the cut 30% of the time, 8% above what you would expect if total parity was achieved. Scum is in about the right place if you believe this chart, at 14% compared to 13. Resistance is basically dead on. I mean, yeah,
it's kind of cool how they were pretty much right there.
Yeah. And you know, we talk about Finn being a crazy value, which he is. But if you think about it, all three of the top factions have something that is probably still a few points undercosted. I'm going to start with Darth Vader. I'm going to start with Rick Ollier. I mean, one could argue Obi-Wan maybe went down a few too many points.
I would say that probably once everything shakes out, everything has stuff that's undercosted. But yes, they have. And undercost. See, the thing about it is that Finn at 30 points is different because he's what? He's a nit. Is it two?
Two. He's two.
There's a difference between an undercosted piece at a nit two and an undercosted piece at a nit. At a net five
and six, yeah.
Just that there's a difference there, and it's magnified. It's like I don't know. I do want to point out one other thing that we sort of glossed over in our justified outrage. But First Order, I know all our listeners have heard how First Order is really, really good, and you should be flying First Order. Maybe so. I've been flying a little bit of First Order and I enjoy it, but First Order has consistently had in Nova and Extended here 50% drop off between this what people bringing them in Swiss and making cut. So 50% drop off. So if they're that strong, then there's something else going on. Like maybe the people saying they're that strong are really strong players with First Order.
I have been the agnostic on First Order. Actually, I think I'm the outright atheist when it comes to First Order on this show. I just Kylo is really good. Quick Draw is very good if you dump the points on it. Tavsin is unquestionable. After that, you're kind of talking about Omega Squad mini swarms and Scorch.
Yeah, I personally think Scorch is overrated, but I do think the TIE SFs built in sort of a minimalist way are really efficient ships.
My only problem with the TIE SF swarm is that, yes, they're six hull, which is great. I mean, for like 34 points, that's incredible. They're very close to an X-wing in capability and survivability. The only difference is they have an evade action and arguably a better dial, really.
They don't have the native three dice attack.
Yeah, right. And the other thing, which is their problem is they don't bite. You have to put points in them for them to really start biting. And they almost disprove this idea that we've all accepted that a two die attack is good enough.
I mean, I don't know about that. They don't bite, but they gnaw really well because typically the two die attack is with advanced optics and or fanatical, and extremely consistent. It is 80, 85, 90% consistent, and that is two die attacks in second edition can hurt people. can even hurt Kylo and can even hurt Soontir Fel.
They can, but you need 4 or 5 of them on target.
Exactly. That's true.
Pardon me. That's kind of their problem, is that it's not really a maneuverable enough ship to get all 5 of them onto an ace that is actively trying to get out of the way.
But that's the big help with the TIE-SF because of that rear arc.
Yeah. So, and not only that, the white rotate into a white action.
Right.
Which is just obscene. Yeah.
Well, generally speaking, the TIE SFs without the Special Forces gunners are never going to rotate their arcs. They're just going to have them pointing backwards all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, because there's no reason to point them forward.
Yep.
But you look at these numbers, and the haves and the have-nots become extremely clear. Like, again, if you add together Separatists, Rebels, and First Order, you do not add up to 2/3 of Empire lists. And you only add up to about, 80% of Republic lists?
Yeah, it's dramatic. So the chart we're looking at, dear listeners, is actually color-coded. He's used some features of Excel for conditional formatting. And so we're looking at, the ships, the factions with the most drop-offs are color-coded red. So that's Rebel, and that's First Order, and that's Separatists. And the factions that are doing really well in the transition from basic population to the cut are color-coded in blue, and that's Empire and it's Republic. And it is consistent. It's consistent on all three charts, the Nova chart, the extended chart, the hyperspace chart.
Speaking of which, let's move on to Hyperspace Season 2. And this is, about four months of it, right?
Is it three?
We're July. I think we had this. We talked about this. It's since July. You've got Rebels are about 10%, we'll call it 10% of the field because that's what it is. Empire is about 17%. Scum is about 9%. Resistance 13, First Order 11, Republic 21% of the field, and Separatists about 8.5%. And then there's no list because nobody ever uploads everything. You see very clearly what the meta has agreed upon are the superior factions.
Yeah.
I don't have another way to say it, guys. I will agree to the comments of certain haters. Yes, I will be a Rebel homer for the moment. Rebels are the third least played faction in the game now, and the worst in terms of making the cut, except for Scum.
Yeah, and they got hit too hard. We talked about it immediately. They got hit too hard.
And not only did they get too hard, but some other guys didn't get touched or got maybe brought down way too far. I'm looking at you, Republic.
You got the 1-point touch? You got the
touch. Well, no. I think it'd probably be easy to say, you could make the argument that Republic now has the best I-5s in the game. Even over, and I think you would say that the previous competitors would be, Rebels and Scum, right?
I mean, Empire's got some good I-5s. But yeah.
Not in hyperspace specifically.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's fair.
Right. There we go. That was what I was
looking for. Yeah, there you go. I got you. Don't worry. But now there's just so many cheap I-5s and I-6s that it doesn't matter anymore. Because you know what beats an I-5? An I-6 that can fly faster.
Yeah, I really hope that they take a really solid top down look at 6s and 5s and 4s. I really hope that they do. And again, for all the doom and gloom that we're talking about, people, I'm having more fun with X-Wing now than I've had since wave 3 or 4 of first edition. The game is in a good place. it's just not, it's in a diverse place even. People are bringing stuff to the tournaments. They're just not advancing in the same, they're not advancing in the percentages they should, because although the game's in a good place right now, it's not really in a fair place right now.
Yeah, and look, I should say the same. I'm having a lot of fun at my local nights, and I have not been unsuccessful at hyperspace trials. I can't say that I have. But you can just, it doesn't take a lot to see problems. That's all. You know, like as soon as you break out a magnifying glass, you'll start finding cracks of paint on a house. So let's we are going to be talking more about Extended in the weeks ramping up to, I hope everyone remembers, Worlds is in basically 4 weeks, right? 1 month from what, Friday?
Oh my gosh. I'm getting married on the 20th. So every time I hear Worlds is coming up at this week, at, you know, a couple weeks away, I'm like, oh yeah, no, that's right. No, wedding. Yes.
You don't sound nearly as happy about that as I would expect.
I think he's.
No,
I'm messing with you.
Troubling times, family dramas. Yeah, and all, but exciting times we live in.
I'm excited for Worlds. We're very happy for you, Drew.
None of us are going to Worlds, right?
No, I really wanted to, but I'm being held back by some poor life choices. We'll put it that way.
Aren't we all?
Yep. So everyone, thank you very much. And thank you again to Mr. Spellock for putting together that fantastic resource for us. I will link it in our page for those who do want to look over it themselves and try to find out what we have missed. Drew and Jeff, thank you very much for joining me as always. Go ahead and sign off, boys.
Hey, I just want to put a plea out there for everybody. I know we had a week off that can be tough on the momentum. So I want to ask everybody, if you enjoy listening to us, if you got something to say, post it somewhere, wherever you're downloading this, wherever you're hearing my really annoying voice. I hate the sound of my voice, just like we all do.
I don't.
Tell a friend. See, we love each other's voices. It's kind of like a daisy chain of admiration here, but we all hate each other. We all hate our own. Tell a friend, point a friend at the podcast and say, these are local guys, or these are guys out in the Bay Area. Give them a listen. If you don't like them, don't blame me, but give them a listen.
We are still accepting new submissions for Jeff's intro Star Wars quote. As we said before, please post those to Facebook, Podbean, or any other area where you believe you can contact us. Everyone, thank you very much for listening. We will get back to you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.